en el casco urbano.
Good afternoon, everyone. I think we can get started. Just quick introduction. I know we shook hands and exchanged cards. I'm Deepak. I'm the managing director for Nelcar. And with me is Shiv Kumar. He's the CFO and company secretary for Nelcar. And joining us also are our IR team, so from EY, who are supporting us in our IR venture. So with that, maybe what I can do very quickly, since it's a larger group, so we've got this investor presentation. It's uploaded on the exchanges on the website, all of that. But I thought perhaps if you'd like, since I'm not sure if everybody's familiarity with the company is the same, we can go through this fairly quickly. I'll try to do it within 10 minutes so that we can keep more time open for questions and, you know, what we're working towards, and a little bit more about the company in terms of what might interest you. If that sounds good to everybody, I can get started.
Yeah.
Sure. All right. So, really quickly, the company was founded in 1985. We manufacture ductile and gray iron castings. Our segments that we cater to primarily is commercial vehicles, tractors, off-highway equipment, railways, and passenger vehicles. We're the largest producer of ductile iron castings for the Indian market, and we're also a large producer of gray iron castings. Wide customer base, ranging from everybody in the sector that are key players in the sector.
So these are industrial players would be a competitor here?
Potentially. On certain products, they are. They produce only gray iron castings. We produce majority of what we produce is actually ductile iron castings. So there is a small overlap of what we do. A big chunk of their production goes into engine block and cylinder heads. We actually don't manufacture that as a product in our product range at all. So there is a small overlap, but fairly small. So some of the key products, and I'll just highlight, I won't explain all the products, just some of the key ones that we're doing. On commercial vehicles, three products I'd like to highlight. One is the forward differential carrier. So this is a component used in heavy duty trucks. So typically a lot of these tippers that you may see, or the heavy duty tractor trailers that you might see, where you have multiple drive axles. So you have, when I say heavy duty, there's a lot of torque that you need to use for moving material or whatever else it may be, or going up steep gradients. So in such situations, there is a forward differential carrier in addition to a rear differential carrier. So what that does is you have two axles that are driven. So the forward differential carrier receives power from the propeller shaft, passes it on to the axle, and it also passes on power to the rear axle behind it, which has the rear differential carrier. So if you look at how this product, how our position in the market is, in the forward differential carrier, we have between 90% and 95% market share in India, and we're exporting these products all across the world. So if you look at the rear differential carrier market, this is something where we've got between 60% and 70% market share within India, and again we're exporting these all over the world. The bogey suspension bracket is used in these heavy duty trucks, where you need to have better application of that torque onto the roads. So it's a relatively growing type of a suspension system, and we produce brackets for virtually every manufacturer who makes these vehicles. On tractors, basically the entire tractor in India, if you see, the entire body is made out of castings. And they're also, not only are they the frame of the component, that's also where all the gears are housed. So we produce all those transmission housings, axle housings. And then one of our new products is this four-wheel drive front axle housing that you see over here. These are products that, until as recently as maybe less than a year ago, these were products that are being imported into India from China, because the capability didn't exist to manufacture products of this size, because these products are about 1.4, 1.5 meters in length, and just about everybody else in the industry has the capability to do nothing more than a meter in length. So this is a new product that we have introduced with our new line that we installed in 2020 and gone through validations with various customers. And it's also something that helps us build relationships with new customers, because, you know, in order for them to source this product, they had to come visit our facility, do their necessary audits and approve us. And now we're in their system as an approved supplier. Off-highway equipment, ITF, again, different products, trumpet housings, monolithic axle housings. A new business that we've recently gotten into is this forklift steer axle. So this is goes end customers actually in the U.S. It's Hyster Yale for their forklift. So it's the first time we're making that entry into the sector. So right now it goes into their new model, which is in the process of getting launched, with several variants getting launched. So this will get ramped up over the next year or so. On railways, we produce brake disc friction rings, as well as base plates for various metro rails. So the base plate is what actually sits on the concrete. It's fastened in by four bolts, and then on this sits the clamp and the track itself. On passenger vehicles, we supply diff carriers and diff cases. Actually, I think virtually none of what we produce for passenger vehicles goes in the domestic market. Almost everything is export, either direct or indirect export. But passenger vehicle is a little bit more of pickup truck SUV, not the typical car segment. So this is just a general process. I'll leave it to you to read through it, perhaps on the on the website when you look at the presentation. Three plants: Gudur, Poneri, and Tadaparia. We've got three automated molding lines at our Gudur plant, which is actually our oldest plant, but we've upgraded all of those lines. The latest upgrade that we did, we just completed that upgrade a couple of months ago. So earlier we used to have run 8 manual lines, and today with 3 automated lines we're able to get we get the same kind of a productivity and capacity output. Our Poneri plant, we have one molding line installed in the year 2001, German machine from a company called Kunterwagner in Germany. This is where we produce, in addition to ductile, we produce gray iron as well in our Poneri plant. Our newest plant is in Tadaparia. We've got two lines. First one was commissioned in 2018, second one in 2020. And if you look at the one in 2020, that's a very unique line. It's about 2.1 meter by 1.2 meters. We can produce castings heavier than 400 kilograms in this line. And it's got, so this is the line that we're able to take on some of this product that earlier could not be made in India for a variety of reasons. I'll try to just kind of stick through some of these things. So if you look at our customer base, as I mentioned, OEM customers, largest customers, CAFE, followed by Tata Motors. We've got, in terms of tier one customers, we've got globally we supply to Dana, to American Axle, to Automotive Axles, Kumar Industries. So again, really wide range of companies we cater to, more than 40 different customers. In terms of where we're located, our manufacturing plants are all north of Chennai. This is on the Chennai-Kolkata highway, but all within 140 kilometers of Chennai off that that highway. One of the benefits of this location is that right here, this is the area where the sand that is utilized for manufacturing of our molds, that's where it's mined. So it gives us better control in terms of the quality of the sand that we're getting, as well as in terms of the cost of moving the sand to other places. So there have been times in the past when other manufacturers across the country have struggled a little bit more to ensure consistency of sand supplies, either due to rain or regulations or variety of things. However, we've been able to avoid those kind of issues on our end. So I'll just talk a little bit about our, what we see in terms of our, growth potential and what we've been doing. So we are exporting to many different countries. In Europe, we're exporting to Italy, Spain, Hungary, Belgium, Switzerland, Germany, Sweden, as well as France. In Southeast Asia, to Indonesia and Thailand. And in Australia, we're supplying Australia, in North America, to US and Mexico. And if you look at the way that we've grown our exports, we've seen actually quite a substantial amount of growth. We were doing, in FY15, actually, if you rewind that a couple of years, in FY15, we did about 2.9 crore of exports. In FY22, we did 221 crores of exports. So this has been an area that is growing quite substantially, and we expect it to continue to grow at quite a substantial pace. In fact, in the last year, this year, last year compared to the year before, we've grown almost 95 crores in terms of our export growth. The reason for that, I think, I believe that India as a supply base, in terms of competency and capability, is very strong, and in terms of economics, is becoming very, very competitive with the rest of the world, and we are very competitive with the rest of the world. So we believe that export is going to continue to grow. We have a few factors that are helping us in this growth. One is in terms of the North American market. Obviously, there is tariffs on Chinese products that are at 25% or higher. In addition to that, in a lot of these cases, the products that we are doing are higher complexity. So typically in past years, we've not even faced Chinese competition. And right now, we're actually getting some business that's getting resourced from China to us. And this is the first time that that's happening. What we used to find was on the simpler part where there were higher, where there maybe the product complexity was not so high. The Chinese foundries were extremely competitive. I think the tariffs are eroding away that competitiveness. The second one is there is also a China plus one strategy. People are concerned about the reliability of China as a trading partner given a variety of reasons. And so that's there. But in most of the cases, we are competing against domestic US foundries or Mexican foundries, and we're able to beat them on quality, price, and every single parameter that we, as well as delivery, and every single parameter that's important to our customers. Right? So that's something that's been quite a positive. So that's why we've grown. When we started with most of the customers, we started with one product and a small share of business of that product. Today we are running several product lines, and we are the dominant supplier to most of our customers on those product lines what we are supplying. So to give you an example, I think one of our customers, Dana, when we started the first product, we started with a 30% share of business on one product. Today we have four products that are running with them. All four are running at 100% share of business. So that's something that I think with the confidence that we've been able to get, we've been able to grow. We have some new products that we'll be launching over the course of this year. One of those is a diff carrier as well as, that will go on the Chevy Colorado series of pickup trucks, the 2023 model year one. So the production will be starting at General Motors facility in January and a few months prior at our facility. So this is pickup truck segment, our first entry into the passenger vehicle segment, pickup truck segment in North America. So we've got that product that will be launching, as I said, at our customer's end in January. The other product that we have that's launching also that goes into that same segment, but a bigger and higher end of that segment is the on the Ford Super Duty as well. We're going to be supplying the diff carrier on that product range on the C15. So if you went to a Ford dealership and you wanted a F450 or 550, then the chances are that you were getting our product on every one of those. The Chevy Colorado, every single product that's going to be sold across the U.S. and Mexico and wherever else they sell it will have our products starting in 2023. In addition to that, we've got several other product lines where we're increasing our share of business. Detroit Diesel is one customer where we're increasing our share of business from 50% to 70%. Similarly, with Dana, we've got some new products that are launching as well that will go into the Class 8 segment. So Detroit Diesel is entirely a Class 8 segment. Dana, at present, is largely a Class 8 segment. Going forward, it will be also the light vehicle segment. We've got an exciting new business also coming in the electric vehicle space. It's a relatively small business to start with in 2023, but it goes quite substantially bigger in 2024. Which is used for an electric delivery van. So that's the type of vans that FedEx uses. In fact, FedEx, I believe, has placed an order for 2,500 of these vans. In total, they're talking about 30,000 of these vans being produced by General Motors. So we've actually received orders for one product that goes into these vans that will be in the model year 23, and another product that will be in the model year 24 as well. So we've got some additional business that's coming in. In addition to that, we've got some new products also that will be launching that will again go into a little bit in the trailer space as well as the heavy truck space, class 6, class 8 kind of space as well. So with that, we feel quite confident in the North American market growth. We're seeing a lot of interest, a lot of potential in Europe as well. Now with the Russia-Ukraine crisis and the energy cost in Europe going up, competitiveness of European foundries seems to be quite dicey, and so there's a lot of opportunity that we are seeing in Europe as well that's coming up where we believe we'll continue to see quite a bit of growth that will happen. Try not to spend too much more time. The other part is the tractor industry, last year was expected to grow, low single digits. It degrew by about 6 to 8%. This year seems to be extremely strong. And the M&HCV segment seems to also be extremely strong. I think we are, I think last year was about 2.5 lakhs or so was the sale of medium and heavy commercial vehicles, down, from a peak that was at about 3.94 lakhs. So we believe that there's a bounce back happening. We're seeing that in the business today. As it stands, typically we see a first quarter that's a lot weaker than the previous fourth quarter. We're not seeing that this time, which typically indicates a very strong strong year ahead. So we hope that that will continue, and we see that continuing. So I think that that's, I'm not going to spend too much time on that. Just one thing I want to just touch upon. In terms of our energy, about 55%, we're a very energy intensive industry, and we've got about 55% of our power that's tied up through renewable sources. Large amount of that is wind. There's a little bit of solar as well. That's part of this equation, but I think from an environment perspective, this is what we believe is our biggest impact on the environment is the amount of energy that we consume, and that's something that we're focused on looking at how do we make it more renewable. So I think I will. I think the rest of the information is publicly available. All the information is publicly available, obviously, but I think I won't highlight the rest of it. I'll leave more time for your questions. Any questions?
So based on the export orders which you have, what is the order book right now, and where do you see the export mix going on in the next, by let's say 2025?
So 2025 is a little bit away, but let me tell you what I see in terms of the orders that we have and where we see this trajectory happening in a relatively short period of time. So if you look at last year, our average was about 55 crores or so per quarter is what the run rate that we were doing in terms of export, right? So it came out to about 220 crores for the year. We believe that when all of these projects hit maturity, which will be Q4 of this year, we would probably be somewhere in that 90-100 crore a quarter kind of a range is where we believe that we'd be. So we think that there's going to be a good amount of growth. Obviously, that assumes that all the projects will launch on time as planned, which, to be honest, I don't see any reason they won't. Right? I think they will, but it does make that one assumption there. So we should be somewhere in that kind of a range.
What about the margins?
So margins in exports are better. They're I wouldn't say substantially better, but they're definitely better. So typically, when we look at margins in the domestic space, we've been looking at margins perhaps something to the tune of on a stable raw material base, something to the tune of perhaps something around 10 rupees a kg or so in the domestic. On the exports, we typically see them closer to about 15 rupees a kg kind of number. On an EBITDA basis, yes. On the export, typically that's something approximately where we see it.
Now, lot of new business you want, you were mentioning in your presentation. So next year, what share of this out of your total revenue, this new business would be how much? Whatever you want in last 2 years, the China Plus One and your own efforts, the expansion, what you have done, product, all that combined together, broadly, how much is the new business?
So again, a lot can change, right? Because I would tell you some of this product that I was talking about from China. If you had asked me 2 months ago, I was not even talking with my customer about it, right? They hadn't even asked me for a quote for business. Today, we're on the fast track to actually being awarded the business, right? We've received, we expect that we will receive this, an order for this business sometime soon, very soon, right? Sometimes it's a little hard. Hopefully, it will be better than what we think it is if we get awarded more businesses. But roughly speaking, we think that, like I said, that that run rate on exports of about, 100 crores a quarter is something that's very achievable, within the next, 12 months or so, right?
And it's currently 55.
It's currently, about 55 or so. So that's what we see as a potential that's there right now with business where I can look at very specifically, I can look at this particular customer, this particular location, approximately this, that kind of a thing. It seems that way. Looking at how the export markets look, right, because I know there's a lot of questions that are being jumped around about, potential, recession and what that impact is going to be and all of that, and I've been asked a few questions about that recently. It seems to be that there's this huge backlog of orders. Right? So when I was visiting customers in the U.S. and as we were preparing for these launches, I also did a little bit of market research, visited a Ford dealership. So this Ford Super Duty vehicle that we're going to launch, I wanted to see, okay, what does the model year 22 look like? How's the market scenario, all of that. So I went to the dealership and I asked the guy a question saying, okay, if I wanted to order this vehicle, how long, what's the wait period? He says, I can't even take an order because there's no production slots available. So, and I said, okay, you know, but what about the guys who are getting deliveries? Do you have a model on the floor? I can see that no, everything is sold out. Everything they could sell, they sold it, right? They don't have anything in the lot that's available for sale. They don't have anything that they can take an order on, right? So there's that amount of, and he says the guy that are receiving their deliveries now placed their order about 9 months ago. In some cases, even 11 months ago. So some of the vehicles, they're not, the supply chain constraints, the production constraints, as well as the high demand has been so stark that they're in a position where they're not even taking orders, let alone saying, okay, I'll deliver it after a year. They're not even, and that seems to be an issue not just for Ford with this one range of product, but across a lot of, you know, maybe the higher end products. So that is something that we think that even if there is some sort of a slowdown, there's going to be need to be a substantial number of order cancellations for that to really impact sales, right? So we think that over the next 2 years at least, the U.S. market will remain quite strong. And if you look at our exports, I would say probably what 85 plus percent of our exports is coming out, 85% or so, maybe 80%, 80% or so is coming out of the U.S. market.
Additional 50 crore will cover
50 rupees
a kg or higher?
I believe it will be something similar only. It won't be. So yeah, so in almost all of the cases we are supplying the product fully machined.
We
give it outside. So we are most of the machining activity that we are doing, we are preferring to outsource it because we believe, I think there's two things. One is the core competence. We believe our core competence is in the casting, and that's where we believe our focus is. The second is also in terms of the opportunities. We believe with the way the global market is moving, we will have great amount of opportunities in the casting segment, and we'd like to keep our resources focused on that.
Craftsman
is one of our major suppliers. I think they're probably our largest vendor we use for machining. They're not the only one.
Right.
We've got a couple of other ones, but in terms of the value of business, I think what we do with Craftsman is perhaps the highest.
What is the capacity utilization right now?
So if we look at last year, for the full year, we averaged out at about a total of 72,000 tons was the sales for the year. Our installed capacity is 160,000, out of which realistically we could probably get to about 80% of that.
What has been the peak production volume?
The peak production I think was about 95,000 or so.
Which year?
1890.
So why 12?
Because the commercial vehicle, so see, there were a couple of things. The commercial vehicle took a fairly severe hit in 1920, even before COVID. Right? The reason for that was the axle load norms that came in, where every vehicle on the road was basically given a license to load more because of the revision of the vehicle loading and that had happened. So that, if you look at, you know, where the M&HCV market was, which is a substantial chunk of our business, you know, if you look at it for the financial that just passed, it was about 40% of our revenue came from M&HCV. So at that point, of course, it was also a little bit higher. But that segment degrew from about, you know, 400,000 plus trucks a year down to below 200,000. Right? So about if you see that over here in one of these things, right? So you can see that here from about 3.9 to 2.25. Can see the kind of drop that happened. So that was one of the reasons that there was that degrowth that happened between 1819 to 1920. But also at the same time, if you look at 1819, you know, where we were in terms of export revenue, we were doing about 90 crores or so. So we've also kind of ramped up our exports. So we believe that number that what we had achieved, we will do better than that in this current year.
When do you feel you can reach to the 80%
utilization? So this is a little difficult to answer because it depends a little bit on the segment recovery and, you know, forces that are beyond our control, right? But we believe, you know, that within the next perhaps 2 years or so, we should be in that position where we can achieve that.
I mean, one of your conference also mentioned that this 10 rupee EBITDA will eventually go to 14 rupees.
We kept a target of 12 rupees for this package target.
So, Ashir Kumar was saying, what we believe we can target and achieve in this current year towards the end of the year, right? Not as an average for the year, but what directionally where we believe we'll be able to achieve is to be at about 12 rupees a kg or so in the current year. And the next 2 to 3 years, we're working towards getting that number overall, right? Not just for export, but overall up to about 15 rupees a kilo.
So how, I mean, this journey, what will be the key levers to improve it?
Product, so yeah, there's a variety of things. One, obviously there's an improvement in the mix in terms of exports. The second one is also in terms of domestic, also more value add that we're looking to do. And of course, with better capacity utilization, also we're looking at better absorption of cost. The other part of it is one of our major costs other than raw material is energy. So we're also looking at how do we procure energy at a lower cost, and so we're working on those things. And of course, there's a lot of productivity improvement activities as well as the other cost reduction activities happening at the plant level that we monitor on a monthly basis.
Do you feel that your prices allow you to make such kind of profit? Because usually they have data of all your cost items line by line, when they try to squeeze the subcontractor. So do you think that you'll be able to?
I think so. I don't see that kind of an issue really cropping in, at least for us. The challenge always has been with, I would say, to some degree, legacy pricing and trying to get legacy pricing kind of bumped up when things like that. But I think we're not particularly. I wouldn't say that's on the top of my concern list whether my customer will say, okay, you're making too much money, give me some money. No, I don't see that happening.
This last 2-3 quarters, percentage margin is down, but you would have maintained your absolute margin.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. Absolutely, right? So there's been a few things that happened, right? In terms of inflation of raw material, we passed through that inflation of raw material.
But now you've not made the margin on the inflation.
One, we're not making the margin on the inflation, but the second part of it is this inflation passed through whatever we have done comes with a lag. So what the mechanism that we have with all of our customers is they'll take the average for what was, let's say, April, May and June, what was the average price of raw materials. When there's an index for that, they'll take that price and that becomes your base price for July, August, September. Right? Unfortunately, what we've seen happen in last year every single quarter is this average is actually lower than your spot price on day one, which is also lower than your average price for the quarter, for the next quarter. So this lag, whatever we've been seeing, that effect of this lag has been there for the last 3 or 4 quarters, and it's been quite severe, the amount of inflation that's happened, right, in terms of raw materials. So we have passed on all the inflation in raw materials. It has been completely passed on to our customers, and I believe in most cases that's been passed on to their end customers as well. But this lag effect is something that has hit our margins quite badly. If you look at last 3 to 4 quarters, if you look at it, that is something that hit us quite badly.
What was the EBITDA per kilo in March quarter?
It's a little higher, right?
$10.48.
Now it's actually reversed, right?
So now it's reversed. So now we will get to enjoy the benefit of of the lag, right?
But
so
told you, generally, how do you lock the price of steel? Your raw material is steel, right?
Steel scrap.
How do you go and block the price of steel? So once you get an order, so of course, the 50 ton order in the last, so you go and block 15 tons of steel. How does it work?
So what we do is we get monthly orders from all the customers, right, in terms of what they require, monthly schedules, right? We get a schedule release typically every month, and some customers they give it every week, that kind of thing. There's a certain portion with the customers where it's fixed and certain portion that's rolling, right, where they keep on updating it from time to time. But it's always continuous, right? So we don't really lock in a big order price, right? Because every month the same product is coming every month. It's not that it's a project where every time you have to go and tender something or get it, right?
So you don't have to give a quotation every time.
Right. So once it's fixed for the quarter, it's the price is fixed, and we move forward with that, and based on the volumes, whatever their demand they're getting, we supply it based on that. So it's difficult for us to actually lock in the price. you know, we have a few levers that we play with, right? Depending on how much inventory we are able to store, what we want to store, we believe we can use that to our advantage and negotiate a better price. We would do that, you know. So perhaps, you know, we might buy, you know, 3,000 tons at a time and just hold it, right? And we may not need to buy any material for the next 2 weeks. So then it creates a certain amount of inventory at the scrap dealer location, and he's more eager to sell, et cetera, et cetera, right? So there is a little bit of tactical things that we can do, but there is really nothing we can do at the moment with the market the way that it is, being a spot market. Nothing we can do to really move away from spot prices, right? So we can use between volumes as well as, you know, requirement and being able to create some buffer of stock or dilute that buffer of stock. We can do a few tactical things to try to optimize what we believe will be the best interest of what we can do. But at the end of the day, it's a spot market, and most of the scrap happens through traders. Purchases happens through traders, because they will be collecting it from a variety of different sources, bringing it into their warehouses. Then they'll be doing a bundling activity to make converted into bundles before we purchase it from them.
So in supply and demand situation, that's what it's changed.
You don't buy it from the MSP website?
No, that steel we cannot use. See, this we have to buy from the traders. So what the traders, they will procure the steel scrap from various OEMs, other dealers. Okay? They will procure and then they will bundle as we sell it. We can't use this steel directly from the OEMs. They come in the loose form, but they have to bundle now.
So on the export side, you mentioned that that's our key growth area in the past few couple of years as well. That has been the growth driver. And you mentioned that for the next 2 years, you see export to be very good. But since majority of our export is to US, given that the fuel prices are rising, your freight cost is rising, and now the interest cycle is also turning upward, do you really see the next 2 years or you see slowdown coming there?
I don't see a slowdown. In fact, what we've seen in the last 3 months at least is an acceleration of interest and potential for new business in the U.S. growing. One of the drivers for that seems to be in the U.S. is a huge labor shortage and inflation driven by also labor costs, right? So we are having you know, customers that are giving us more business than they've contracted us, and they've actually upgraded our contract. So we had one particular product that I mentioned, right, the first product that we started with Dana, we started with a 30% share of this, 20-30% share of business. During the last contract negotiation they had with the other supplier, they were having a long-term agreement with the other supplier. You know, the other supplier fought tooth and nail and said, listen, I don't want to go out of the business. You increase Nelka's share of business from 30 to 70, but you at least retain me at 30. So we had gone up to somewhere between 70-80% was where our share of business was. Today, that supplier has gone to the customer and said, listen, you give this business away. Today, now I can't meet it. I'll use that capacity because I'm not able to achieve what I want to achieve, right? So we've actually been, as of a couple of months ago, increased to 100% on that particular product, right? It's not a significant amount or anything substantial that will change the world for us, right? That small change in the percentage of business. But I think the reason I'm highlighting is it's a little bit more, they're having more problems sourcing parts domestically so I think supply constraints are definitely there domestically. We hope that this issue that's there in terms of freight pricing, and I think everybody feels that way, is perhaps, you know, it's not over yet. It's not going to start declining. Freight prices are not going to magically start declining now. But perhaps another year, 2 years, you know, when you take a slightly longer term view, we do believe that freight prices will never come back to their old levels, but they will definitely not be at these levels. Will they be at about half of where we are today? Perhaps, maybe even a little lower than that. But you know, so it's a little bit of a temporary pain. And again, as an inflation, I think that's also gotten passed through, right, in many cases.
So our growth will come primarily from increase in share of business or increase in the market size?
So there's two things, right? So I think share of business, we've been growing quite a bit. And of the products that we already have, the specific products that we already have, meaning, so if I take, let's say, a differential carrier that's 140 millimeter, 14-inch size for Dana, we're already at 100%, right? So the ability to move from 100 doesn't. So when I look at where is it where dual sourced and where this potential. It's actually small because we've, in most of the cases, wherever they started us off as a dual source, we've become the single source again. And I would like to credit that to performance, right? So when I look at it, share of business increase, I don't see that much of existing products. I don't see that much potential at the time being. But there's a lot of new products also that are coming, right? So there's a lot of you know, another product that we'll develop that would be probably the next size up or the next size down, and then we'd get awarded that that business as well. And one thing that we've seen is earlier when we were getting awarded new business, we were getting awarded new business at a share of business, right? So they would give some part of the business to a domestic supplier, some part of the business to us. Today, when we're getting launched on new products, we have a single source on those products. So one is, you know, more products. You know, there's a lot more happening on the, you know, in terms of growth. Our biggest chunk is in that class 6, class 8 range of trucks that we're doing. But again, the new segment that we're literally just getting into now is the, you know, the light duty, medium duty trucks, right? The pickup trucks. That range is, again, completely new for us. We've never been in that segment ever in North America. And we're going to be entering that segment in a big way. You know, in the next few months.
The last thing here, 3 years that our share of export was around a high single digit. This year it's in the range of 20 to 25%. Okay, FY25 next 2 to 3 years, where do you see?
I'll preface this. I don't like answering that question only because I don't know what domestic is going to do. Right, export seems to be growing quite strongly. I believe if there is a real turnaround in the M&HCV segment, in the tractor segment as well, hopefully in a couple of years from now, we could be doing, you know, our domestic base also could be high enough. But, I mean, realistically, I think, you know, maybe 30 or 35%, something like that is what we can see the picture at a couple of years down the line. But, again, I preface that by saying I think there's a little bit of legs in the domestic business as well that we'll see in these next couple of years.
In the domestic business, based on your interaction with your customers, what kind of sense are you getting for this year?
So,
especially on the CV side.
I think M&HCV people are quite bullish. M&HCV, I think they're looking at about a 20% or so. Maybe if I had to put a range on it, I'd probably say 18 to 25%. I think publicly Tata Motors has also come out and said 20%. They're telling us, you know, 20%, and then putting a little smile and saying maybe better, you know, those kind of things, right? So you know, similarly, you know, what we've been told by Leyland is they expect a bare minimum of 18%, right? And they think it could go perhaps even higher than 25%. So that's the kind of what we're seeing on the M&HCV side. And if I just equate that to what we've seen, right? Historically, what we've seen is, we've seen after Q4, there's about a 25% drop off to Q1. And then as the year goes around, it keeps increasing. And there's usually a little bit of a dip somewhere around November or so because of the model year badging, et cetera, some small things. But typically, this is kind of the cycle that we see. This year, what we're seeing is, we're seeing Q1 M&HCV demand equal to, or in some cases, greater than what it was in the Q4. Of last year, right? Which, again, we would have expected to see a 25% dip. We're not seeing that. We're seeing it flat, right? So a 25% number doesn't seem to be out of the ordinary at all. The tractor industry, you know, we're seeing right now perhaps something to the tune of, you know, 10% or so right now is what we're seeing. Right? Obviously, April, everybody reported, you know, some 40% growth in industry, et cetera, et cetera. But let's keep in mind that, you know, last year, April also was when, you know, we had COVID Delta wave kind of rampant throughout the country. So I think April and May months of last year were not perhaps very good indicators. In fact, we saw very good demand last year in April in M&HCV. And then as soon as COVID hit, that recovery never happened. It never bounced back last year. So we hope that this year we have no such issues, and the numbers that we're seeing continue to remain very strong. And for us, one of the other things that we're seeing, sorry, I'll come to you in a second. One of the other things what we're seeing is in the heavy duty side, when you've got more infrastructure spend that's happening, the number of tippers that get sold is much higher,
right? So there's a lot of, if you believe there's going to be a lot of infra spend that's going to happen, a lot of road construction activities, shallow mining activities that's going to happen, tipper sales will do quite well. And there's two parts that will help us outgrow the industry when that happens, when tipper sales as well. One, the casting content per vehicle on a heavy-duty tipper is higher than a traditional haulage vehicle. The second thing that's there is our share of business in these tippers that are the heavy-duty tippers is, again, much higher than the industry. So if you believe that this segment is going to outgrow the overall industry as a whole, then I believe we will also outgrow not only the overall industry but also this segment because of our share of business, right? I think a couple of products I pointed to, which was the bogie suspension bracket as well as that forward differential carrier when I was highlighting the product. And these are products that are going, a lot of these are going in those tippers. And our share of businesses are in excess of, 70% and for the bogies and 90% for the differential carriers. So that's something that will...
Sorry.
So as I mentioned, right, so one, I think on the cost side that we're working on, so one is, of course, with improvement in capacity utilization, which we believe will happen this year. For sure, we're seeing a lot of positive signs on that. The second area that is on the cost side, one is cost reduction activities that we're doing, but in addition to that, energy costs. And we've got power purchase agreements with.
Yes, energy.
See, what happens in foundry, generally the more and more volume produced, there will be a lot of costs are made. Okay, in terms of power, energy cost, all other variable costs also will become slightly better for us. And second, on the energy front, we buy from EB as well as from wind. Okay, we get some price advantage if you buy from the wind because we have good captive segment with the supplier, power supplier. So we get some power cost
advantage. So it's a lower cost of power that we're able to buy. But there's a commitment. There's two parts of it. One, there's a capital investment that's been made for it to be a group captive purchase. And the second part of it is also that we're committed to buy whatever is produced, right? So our share of whatever they produce, we are also committed to buy that. So we can't necessarily be at 100% because we have to manage our variations as well. So we do have potential. So right now we are at about 160,000 tons. So I believe that in the existing plants, one of the things that let me elaborate on one thing and then I'll give you the whole picture. So in our Pedaparia plant, in phase two of the Pedaparia plant, we have installed 42,000 tons capacity. There's an additional 30,000 tons where the automated lines, everything is ready. We need to add furnaces and supporting equipment, right? So that is about a 30,000 ton increase that we can do over there. Also in our Poneri plant, we have some room to do modernization as well as add some additional furnaces, etc. And that we're looking at as about another 20,000 tons. So about 50,000 tons or so we can look at as an investment. As a further increase within our existing facility before we have to really start looking at greenfield. And these investments, fortunately, are something that we can do at a fairly reduced cost, right? Something maybe 50-60 crore kind of investment. So it's not a substantial, 250 crore investment which you have to do to create this kind of capacity.
But is that any scope for debottlenecking?
Yeah, so that is something that continuously we keep working on and we're doing. So right now we believe we can achieve about 80% or so and we believe we can get to that in the next couple of years.
80%
of 160,000, right? So about 120, 125, something like that.
That is utilization, but you said 160 plus 50 is what you can do in terms of dumping capex. I also wanted to understand in terms of debottlenecking, is there more scope to improve?
Not beyond that, no. So we can, within that 160, we can debottleneck and try to improve from where we are today to get to that 80%. It's possible we can do even slightly better than 80%, as we get there, there'll be smaller bottlenecks that we'll have to resolve and we can probably even get beyond that 80% gradually. But
currently, where are we from the beginning?
So if you look at it, for the whole year we did about 72,000 tons. for the last quarter, we did about 20,000 tons, approximately, like give or take 500 tons kind of a number. Right? So at that run rate, it was basic, would have been basically at about 80,000, about 50% would be the utilization.
Sir,
so
at what
EBITDA can we always last 10 year ROC has been very, very good, somewhere lower than cost of equity, cost of capital also. So what is our next five year vision when we see such great opportunity, profit ability? So what sort of EBITDA required to cross 20-22% ROC? So I think for us to cross a 20% or so, I think we can at about a, you know, 15 rupees a kg kind of a thing, if we're doing, you know, 120,000 tons, we will be able to achieve that.
So that would be by FY 25 to 24.
That's the goal. Yeah. Let's say 25 and hope it's sooner.
How will you handle the working capital pressure given the export mix will be like 40% and the lead times are 90 days plus?
Yeah. So I think working capital is something that will be that, because export is does put a little bit of pressure on terms of working capital because of the lead times in terms of receivables and all of that. But I think that's something that we'll still manage it internally. We have to.
So basically, sir, your inventory days and receivable days has been stretched. It is because you have been able to manage your payable days. Working capital cycle looks a little better.
Roughly about 2.5 months.
Absolutely. So as your export percentage increases,
yeah,
your working capital is going to be stretched.
It will. It will. The working capital requirement will be higher with greater exports. But again, like I said, I think there is some legs in the domestic, right? So it's a little bit of a ratio as well. But yes, I mean, that's a fact.
So are you also planning to go into value addition, like more of the machining? How much portion of your output is full machined, and how much would be drop?
So I would say in terms of our scope of supply, about 70% perhaps is, or 65% would be supplying it in fully machined condition. Out of that 65%, if I break that up, out of 65%, I would say maybe 15% we are doing it internally, and balance 50% is outsourced.
What is the margin differential between the domestic and export business?
I mentioned on EBITDA basis, right now it's about 5 rupees per kg kind of a number. That's the difference.
Working capital cycle export versus domestic in terms of number of days?
Yeah, so domestic is about, 60 days, right?
Yeah, 60 days.
Domestic is about 60 days. Export is at about 120 days, right?
120 days.
Any plans to shift the machining capacity fully integrated?
Not at the moment, no.
In-house?
No.
But your working capital is currently increasing because the share export is.
Yeah.
Do you have any surplus land kind of which is planning to
explore? So there's a couple of things. So there's a couple of things. One, I mean, we do have some amount of land unutilized within the company itself. And in addition to that, there's a subsidiary that we have, NC Energy, which was created, I think, probably 12 years ago or so for the purpose of setting up a power plant. So that subsidiary has acquired about 480 acres, 420 acres of land that is part of that subsidiary. We're not currently investing anything further in that subsidiary in terms of this thing. We're looking at a couple of options. One, whether it makes sense to set up something solar for our own captive use, or the second option that we're looking at is if we find the right opportunity, we will look at disposing that asset.
So you bought it 12 years back. So in this 12 years, was there any installation of power plant happened?
No, nothing. So the original identified area was actually about 1,000 acres that we were was planning to acquire. But however, we decided, I think, to stop when we got to this.
What was the amount invested in this land?
What's about 38.5 crores? 38.5 crores.
And what would be the current value?
That we don't have a
approximate.
No, we have not done any evaluation of the land. What we invested is about 40 crores in the
subsidiary.
It's in Tuticorin district. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the power plant that Tanjirco has in Udangudi.
Yeah.
It's actually fairly close to where the new ISRO launch pad is coming up, if you've been following that. It's not too far away from that. So we believe if we wait a couple of years, there's going to be a good amount of development happening there, and there's potential value that can be unlocked as opposed to trying to exit today.
Do you also have any exposure to railways?
Yeah, so there's two products we're doing for railways actually, not directly to the Indian Railways, but through some an integrator who does additional value add. Right, so one is we're supplying to a company called Wabtec, which actually is a company that acquired GE Transport, that entire rail division, right? So we're supplying to Wabtec, and what we're supplying to them in India is their disc brakes. So all the Rajdhani Shatabdi trains, because they are expected to travel at speeds up to 160 plus kilometers an hour, they can't use the conventional type of brakes. They have to use disc brakes like we have on our cars, right? Of course, the discs are a lot bigger. They're about 125 kilos each, 130 kilos each for a disc. So we're making that product. When we started this business, you know, the goal was to say, okay, can we do 300 or 400 a month? Suddenly, the Indian Railways took bold decision to say that all new coaches will be LHB coaches, which are being used on the Rajdhani Shatabdi. So in 2018-19, we saw a huge increase, and now we've seen it stabilize over the last couple of years. So at about what we thought 400-500 would be great, it's currently somewhere around 2,000 or so a month that we're doing these discs. So that is one part of the railway business we do. The second part of the railway business that we do is the base plates for all the metros. So this base plate has, you know, four holes which are used to anchor the plate down onto the concrete below it. It also has a little functionality thing here where the clamp, there's a little spring that's used to hold the track in place, and the track is also placed on the plate. So this is, something we used to supply, you know, from phase one of Delhi Metro. So we've been doing this business for, you know, 22 years or 21 years or something like that. What used to be a very project-based business, right? It used to be that, suddenly you get phase one of the Delhi Metro, you get this huge amount of order for 6 months, then you forget about it for the next 5 years. Then phase two of Delhi Metro came, again, same kind of a thing, 8 months, there was all this business, and then it went away. But what we've seen since 2013-14 is there's metro after metro after metro. So we've never seen a gap of more than a few months, 2, 3, 4 months, between project to project. And there's this huge pipeline of projects that are lined up for the next 3 or 4 years that it looks like it will continue to stay this way, right? I think right now we're finishing up the most recent phase of the Bangalore metro. So there's a Kanpur metro that we did, there was a Lucknow metro we did, there was a Kochi metro we did Hyderabad metro, I don't know how many phases we did. Delhi metro, since then there's been so many other phases that have come. Navi Mumbai we've done. I think there's a whole bunch of...
So
1,30,000
what
we will
do at peak, how much
we
will do
better? Not that much, I think perhaps, you know, we'll be maybe 500-600 tons a month. So
4.4% if you see our revenue.
4.4%
is the current revenue. It will probably remain something similar to that only. I don't think it will double. It might even come down as a percentage.
The entire journey of 10 rupees, 50 paisa to 15 rupees, almost like 45%
increase,
45%.
So you're driven entirely by export? No. So obviously, as I said, one is on the cost front, right? So there are...
Volume, more and more volume we do in foundry, so
we
get a lot of cost.
So as you mentioned, we look at power cost as a variable cost, right? Technically, we look at, when we think about power cost, we look at it as a variable cost. Even though in power cost, there are two parts. There's a maximum demand, which is a fixed cost for the month, and then there's the unit consumption. The other part is, let's say, for example, you're melting 100 tons a day. You know, your unit consumption might be at about 700 units a ton. When you improve your efficiency, and instead of doing 100 tons a day, you're doing 120 tons a day, this 700 units per ton will actually come down to 680 units per ton. So even though we consider the 700 as a pure variable cost, this 700 gets even better as you get more and more efficient, right? So there is some amount of that also in addition to operating leverage that comes into the picture, right? Then there's obviously in terms of energy purchases as well, there is something that we're doing. Margin also, even on the domestic, some of the new products, what we're talking about, the four-wheel drive axle housings, all these kind of products, we're talking about, you know, newer products with more complexity and unique capability of what we can produce versus what we believe is available in the market. So there, we think that move, we can make that happen.
Okay.
What kind of increase in debt do you see in the next couple of years?
So I think I don't see the I see whatever we pay down in terms of in terms of our repayment, which is roughly about 30 odd crore a year, kind of a repayment that we have. I don't see that we will probably take on much debt,
I mean,
debt more than
total
that.
Total debt maybe more or less.
This is the peak debt.
Yeah, correct.
The 300 crore kind of.
We have no idea to borrow. We are peaked out now. Yeah.
We're not looking at increasing.
Yes.
So we'll see, you know, term loans start to go down. We'll see the working capital kind of take its place a little bit as this thing goes forward.
Total as a debt, absolute number.
We don't foresee at this point, at least we don't foresee any real increase happening.
So what will be the difference in